What do Dancing with the Stars, the Sex and the City universe, and one of the most viral ads of 2019 have in common? Well, they represent some of the many pop culture touchpoints of the ubiquitous fitness brand Peloton. From its complicated relationships with the music that accompanies its cycling classes to the star-making of its stable of instructors, the Peloton universe is at least as much a pop culture success as a fitness one. I'm Linda Holmes, and that's why we are talking about Peloton on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us is Barry Hardiman, NPR senior editor. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
And also joining us is our pal writer, Kat Chow. Welcome back, Kat.
Hi.
And rounding out the panel is NPR political reporter Danielle Kurtzleben. Welcome back, Danielle.
Yay, thank you.
I'm so excited to have you all here. I feel like we should be doing big, like, hype up kind of chatter. But if you're not familiar with Peloton, they make stationary bikes that show you a video workout you can follow along with. They have instructors who follow a lot of different styles, do classes with a wide range of levels of difficulty. You can also subscribe to the video workouts without having the bike. You just don't get quite the same neatly packaged and very expensive experience. They also do make a treadmill that's back on the market after being recalled over safety issues. And they have yoga and strength classes and things that are like guided breathing, stuff like that. Cody Rigsby, the cycling instructor who's probably their biggest celebrity, landed on Dancing with the Stars last year. And as a lot of you may know, a Peloton workout played a major role in the first episode of the Sex and the City revival that's running on HBO Max as we speak. So it's a whole thing. A couple of caveats before we get underway. First of all, you do not have to have a pricey Peloton bike to follow this weird universe, and you also do not have to use Peloton at all to use an indoor bike for exercise. We must stress, fitness studios exist, like SoulCycle, other ones, plenty of other gyms from cheap to expensive exist, and my own grandparents, my grandparents, had an exercise bike in their basement in the 1980s. Peloton has not done anything interesting or groundbreaking by suggesting people ride stationary bikes, which, despite Peloton's move into other arenas, remains the thing they're most known for. So the conversation we're having is less about Peloton as any kind of exercise revolution and more about it has developed a pop culture identity that's been essential to getting people to, frankly, part with money. So the fact that this is all highly commercial and highly cultural rather than it being like a healthcare company or something. In fact, they call themselves a media company, which I think is very interesting.
So fascinating.
All of those caveats having been said. Danielle, how long have you been a Pelotonian?
I got one in the early days of the pandemic when it became clear that I think that puts me in the same boat as a lot of people. When it became clear that I couldn't use the gym in my apartment building, certainly not the NPR gym where I was a reasonably regular.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm pushing 40. I can't run every day anymore. So I figured I needed something. And I had been hesitant to get a Peloton for a long time because I thought, like, that's unnecessary. I can work out elsewhere. And also, I don't need to contribute to the fraying social fabric of America by doing yet another thing alone, non-communally. But yeah, when it became lockdown, I was like, yep, getting one then. And honestly, I've ridden it a lot since then.
Do you have a favorite instructor?
Christine.
Oh, Christine, I love Christine.
This is like, which Babysitter's Club person are
exactly.
you? I cannot wait to hear everybody's.
Or like, what's your sign? My sign is Cody Rigsby. I'm a Scorpio.
It's true. I think Christine has a good balance of like, she's demanding, but she's like also nice. I also feel like she doesn't hate you if you have to slow down or something like
And also, she's an athlete. She is a serious cyclist, but also quite clearly a grown-up theater kid.
Yeah.
And I love this dichotomy. She's dramatic. She's weird. But also, like, Peloton has that whole, you're an athlete by God thing going on. And she really pushes that. And you know what? I'm kind of a sucker for it. So
It's very flattering.
Oh, yeah.
Are you pretty monogamous with instructors? Do you date around?
I was like,
at
she
all,
just got married.
with instructors.
Marriages come in all shapes and sizes,
they
Barry.
Do. They do.
But
they
no.
Do. Step into your power.
No, I take classes from all sorts of instructors. Really, what I go by is the difficulty level on the class. If I'm looking at classes that I'm like, all right, do I feel like an 8.6 today? Let's do an 8.6. Or like, all right, I feel like a 7.5 or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's more that.
Kat, what is your workout select? Like, how do you manipulate their offerings and figure out what you want to do?
I often go to the little you know, right-hand box where it says what your friends have done recently.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm a social Peloton rider, you know? I
gotcha.
Basically got the bike in December of 2020
yeah.
because some friends who I had previously affectionately made fun of for joining the Peloton cult talked about Peloton so much that my partner and I decided to buy one. And so really, I would just start riding and just taking whatever classes they took. But now I base it on length. I really just like shorter classes and difficulty level, like what Danielle was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really love the yoga classes and the bar classes that are not on the bike. You don't have to have a actual Peloton bike to take those classes. You can just, you know, have the membership. And I find them really nice and relaxing. I love Aditi Shah's classes.
Yeah.
She has good vibes, good energy.
Well, and you're talking about, I think, one of the elements that has really contributed to their success, which is that social angle. Mm-hmm. It's not just the social thing of like what your friends are doing, which is also something that, of course, really buoys certain television shows. Like, it's also one of the things that gets weaponized by The Bachelorette. It's sort of talk about it with your friends, like we're doing right now. It's talk about your favorites, but it's also the leaderboard, which yeah. I want to talk about. And a lot of people, you can turn off the leaderboard and you never see it. But the leaderboard is like, for example, if you're doing a class and it's an on-demand class and maybe it's been online for months and months, it might show that like 150,000 people have taken the class and you are at like wherever you are in those 150,000 in terms of like its output and its other stuff. I don't fully understand how you even land somewhere on the leaderboard. Like, and I shared this on Twitter one time that it was like, I was doing one where I was like number 23,000 out of 26,000. And I was like, as it was in gym class, so it is in life. And I think it's really interesting that they've managed to kind of put a leaderboard in that, like, why would you need to know that? But it's an interesting, I think, angle. What do you think, Barry?
Well, I mean, I'm a person. The first time I did this thing, they were like, double tap if you don't want to see the leaderboard. And that was the last time I saw the leaderboard. So, I mean, I should tell you, like, I am not like not a sports competitive person. I am not a worker outer. I am barely upright most of the time. I have hated exercise my whole life. I still have residual gym class trauma. And I had a bad dream about trying to get the volleyball over the net because we were going to do this episode. So I am like not a person to ask about the leaderboard. I suspect that Danielle is. But I will tell you this. I am, as far as instructors go, and this maybe I'm a Virgo, so I'm a Robin with a Cody rising, because I'm a Leo rising, maybe a little bit of Alex.
Love Alex.
I go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And guess what, y'all? My moon is in Matt Wilpers. There's something so like, yeah, he's going to take your suitcase and put it in the upper compartment for you. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I just am in such good hands. And,
oh boy.
Wow.
And this is one of the reasons that I really do think this is an appropriate topic for PCHH, you know, is that I really go there for entertainment.
Yes.
I barely go there for anything else and have been known to sort classes, not just in terms of how hard are they, but like I will go way back to the beginning to find a badly shot class.
Nice.
I do not want a hard class, but I do want a class with a ton of Dua Lipa, like a full-on Beyonce class. I want that Jennifer Lopez ride for the person that hated gym class but really liked the school dance.
Yeah.
That's me.
Well, they have made a big deal out of these artist classes, and some of them make total sense, right? Like, I totally get why you'd have, like, a Beyonce class. Like, but then you go through and, like, if you're me and you're an old, you're like, oh, Elton John class. That's an interesting idea. And then it's like, sure. Okay. I get it. I understand. And it is one of the ways I think that they use culture to sort of fight the monotony.
Well, the Broadway classes.
Oh, the Broadway classes.
The Broadway classes are a huge thing. Yeah. And it's not just the Hamilton ride, but just, you know, like Ally Love and Christine, like they will do a
Christine
sort of
has one.
A deep right. cut. Oh, Jess King. Oh, I love Jess King. I forgot to say her. She's
Jess King is great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love her.
She's the one who's in the Sex and the City thing.
Yeah, she killed Big, right.
Yeah.
And then brought him back.
Danielle, is it true what Barry said? Are you a leaderboard person?
I mean that as a compliment.
Oh, listen, you
affection.
If you have identified me as an intense person, you are spot on.
No, as a sporty person, I mean intense as well.
This is totally true. Intense about the sports that I care about, which are few. But anyway, the leaderboard, I have a complicated relationship with it because on the one hand, competition makes me break out in hives, but on the other hand, I still am very competitive. And so I, you know, I do find myself staring at it. You know, I've been a competitive runner at various points in my life. And so like that whole thing of following the leaderboard and seeing who else is on it and so on, like, yeah, that does motivate me. But to get back to sort of the communal aspect of it, that's a thing that I've been thinking about a lot is like, on the one hand, there's the fun thing of like, you know, send someone a high five. And, you know, when someone does send me one, there is an interesting feeling of, oh, yes, there is another person out there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, totally.
Like, that's fascinating. It's not a thing you would ever get from like a Jane Fonda workout video or a prior right. mm-hmm. not internet connected exercise. But on the other hand, I have this very nuanced feeling of when I would go to a spin class or go to the gym. To be clear, I hate talking at the gym. I do not want to be talked to. I am not there to make friends. I am there to win. But when I am, but then again, like there is a community thing that happens at the gym. Like the NPR people I would see at the gym, I did not talk to them there, but then I knew them outside.
Oh, yes.
No, that's the thing.
They're gym people.
It feels a little more connected to humanity. And so like, the leaderboard is really interesting. It's almost like you're interacting with a human, but I don't quite know how to feel about it in that sense.
Yeah. An interesting thing is when, so I got mine in July, I think, of 2020. And like, look, I come to this, I have a feeling from a somewhat different perspective than any of you, and particularly from Danielle, right, who is a sporty person, competitive person about gym and sports and enjoys that aspect of it. I come to this with like deeply triggered anxieties around fitness, diet culture, exercise. Like I was always the slowest person running when I was in gym class and it was embarrassing. The first time that we talked about potentially doing an episode about Peloton, even though I was using it and liked it, I had this reaction of like, I don't want to talk about it. It was like, I just don't want it. Like my fitness journey is like not public. Mm-hmm. But I realized it is interesting to think about why this is something that I will still sometimes actually use. And I think it goes back to like how cleverly they have managed to be a lot of different things to a lot of different people culturally, right? Mm-hmm. The minute I hear this instructor talk about don't make excuses, there was one I was listening to the other day where the instructor said, I wouldn't tell you to do anything I didn't know you could handle.
What?
And I was like, you're wrong. That's irresponsible. You suck, ooh, right? She was like, don't stop.
That's how Big died.
She was like, keep going. You know, I wouldn't be putting this on you if you couldn't handle it. And I'm like, you have absolutely no idea whether that's true. But to a lot of people who don't take that kind of stuff literally, that works fine. For me, I need like the chillest people in the world. That is why I am a Sam Yo person.
Oh, yes.
Oh, love Sam Yo.
Former Buddhist monk.
Oh, yes.
Now, see, everybody just suddenly, oh, Sam, that's right. That's exactly how Sam is. He always starts his rides by saying something like, yo.
Oh, it's yes, yo. That's mm-hmm. That's his thing.
And I find him to be the most like soothing. And he's the one who I always feel like would be like, I get that you are not comfortable with this. I get that you have high emotion about all this kind of stuff. But because they have set up all of this, like maybe you want this kind of instructor, maybe you want that kind of instructor. You can have Cody who kind of doesn't care how you feel about fitness, yeah. I think.
And he's just talking the entire time about like Britney Spears.
It is a show.
It's more like going to a party with someone.
Yes.
Whereas Christine is a little more therapy-ish to me.
Oh, yeah. She'll cry. I'll cry.
Oh, my God. I was doing I think it was a cool down ride I was doing with her one time where they started playing, good job. They started playing. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I started crying on the bike.
Oh,
and
my God.
I mentioned that on Twitter and somebody was like, oh, you know, that's very common. People, you can get very vulnerable because you're in this like kind of elevated state you know, stimulus and everything from working out.
And also, it is not just that, but I will say, like, it turns out that there's a certain kind of person that I did not know I was that is very vulnerable to, vulnerable isn't even the right word, but I really love a certain kind of generalized encouragement about how amazing I am. Like, I want somebody to be like, you are a precious jewel.
Yeah.
You woke up today.
Good job. Yeah.
Get on this bike and be your amazing self.
Yeah.
But I know, like, my husband is just like, I cannot with the self-talk. Do not tell me to step into my power.
Yeah. What, Danielle, what kind of self-talk do you like?
Oh, good question. I am realizing while I'm listening to you guys talk, this question never occurred to me. what I'm realizing, I think, is the reason I'm pausing is that I think my brain has a filter on it. If there's pep talks I don't like, I just don't listen, you know?
Interesting.
Right.
Oh, because you're there as an athlete.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be honest, part of the reason why this bike has been, I don't know if you'd say good for me. I'm sure there are mental health professionals out there who have thoughts on this, but why I have really kind of gotten into this during the pandemic in particular is this is a really anxious time and I have a fair amount of anxiety. Part of the reason that I have really gotten into riding this thing is because they tell you how fast to go, where to turn the knob, and just do your thing. And cool.
Yeah.
Then I shut off my brain for the 45 minutes or however long and do not think.
Yeah.
Just it's kind of checking out. I don't know if that's healthy, but I tell you what, it's, you know what?
It's healthy.
It's healthy. It's exercise. It's fine. But
I appreciate that. And I think, you know, there were times last year where I would just ride and I would only take the gentler classes.
Yeah.
And I noticed that almost all of the classes I was taking, and I don't know if this was just across the board or just what I was selecting, would sometimes have this disclaimer about how Peloton was not essentially therapy. It felt like legalese, and I can't remember it off the top of my head.
No, it is.
Yeah.
It is legalese.
Yeah.
Like in the SAD classes
Definitely.
And whatever, when they were doing the mood classes, they have to begin it with a disclaimer.
Mm-hmm. Right. But then I realized that, you know, when I was taking those classes over and over again, I was like, maybe it's time that I actually start signing up for real therapy again or something of that nature. And so, I mean, this is not to say that, you know, Peloton has saved my life or what have you, but it has added a level of awareness that, you know, I didn't realize I would have had going in, because when I first got the bike, I just mostly did it because I needed to exercise. And I was so fascinated by the whole cult personas and the celebrities within these bikes. So I found that really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I want to say one other thing too, which is I think that when you, especially when you talk about things like that, that's when I start thinking about how expensive the bike is and how expensive the program can be for people.
Oh,
and it's one of my real frustrations with the fact that if we had a smarter and more long-term based like healthcare system, it would be more supportive of setting people up with maybe not this equipment, but with like some equipment, because, you know, for me, I think if you have the right thing, it is way easier to do. And as it stands right now, this is a, you know, particularly if you go for the branded bike, which as we said in the intro, you don't have to. There's much to be gained here. And a lot of it is not available if you don't have the resources to buy the branded bike. And that, you know, that's true about subscribing to certain, you know, endless streaming services and stuff like that. And I'm not insensitive to that with other things, but especially with this, it's like, it's so much money. And
it's expensive.
I wish the things about this kind of program that were good were available, you know, more broadly.
I wanted to back up to a thing that Linda was saying about like fitness culture and, you know, potential triggers with exercise and teachers and all of that, because Lord knows there's a gajillion out there. It's a question I wanted to pose to you guys actually as well, is about how much fitness culture is and isn't a part of Peloton. Because when you ask me what kind of pep talk do you like, what I can tell you is that anything about, hey, this will make your butt look good, hey, this will make you skinnier, immediately would make me launch myself off of the bike and throw the thing out the window.
100%.
Like, I can't.
I rarely hear that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But like, there is a lot of like, move your beautiful self back to that. There's a little bit of stuff that is related enough to that that sometimes is, I find, a little bit yicks.
And also, I understand it's an exercise machine, but do we need, like, for example, calories are right there on your screen. And furthermore, you know, like, it's a pretty slender group of people that are teaching you. And
Yes. Which is ironic, because as a bigger person, I can tell you, for some kinds of bigger people, it's actually a workable thing that doesn't pound on your knees.
Yeah.
And yet they don't market to that because it would mean interfering with the brand.
So it seems like both, you know, they do the whole be strong and an athlete and not skinny thing, and that's great, but it seems like they only do it up to a point. I don't know. I'm curious what you guys' experience of that is, because I feel very ambivalent about that whole aspect of it.
I think they get some right and some wrong.
Yeah.
And one of the dangerous things that, like when you say you have a filter, I do worry in the same way that Linda was saying, like, I wouldn't tell you to do anything. You don't know me. So no, you are going.
Right.
So there's the filter for that stuff. There's also the filter for, once you start to do the thing of this is going to make your muscle, I've definitely heard the like, oh, this is going to give you that little rip here or there or whatever. Once you start to talk about the things on the body, I am out. And I know, and it is just too related to that Jane Fonda, like, you know, or the sort of the old school exercise.
Thighmaster.
So aspirational.
Yeah.
I will say for me, I, you know, this is why I don't take a lot of the, you know, intense classes, why the difficulty rankings that I look at and opt into are always on the lower spectrum. And I will always modify, and I appreciate when the instructors specifically say, you take this at the level where you're at. And I think, you know, for example, Cody is really good at, you know, saying you're in whatever range you need to be on the bike, whatever resistance or cadence, that's for you. And I use those as guides, but I often don't really follow them. Just as long as I'm doing the whole class, that's okay.
I think you have to have a certain ability to filter out the stuff that isn't going to work for you, or it can be kind of a toxic thing. And I think when I was listening to this one with the, I wouldn't have you do anything I didn't know you could do. The funny thing was, she was also doing all of that messaging about do it at your level, if you need to change it, whatever. They've clearly been like, they have to do that. They've clearly been told they have to do that. But when your motivators are of the, if you think you can't do this, you're wrong, you can. That is flying directly in the face of you may need to adjust it for yourself. So the messaging can be extremely contradictory, I think, in that way.
Yeah. I also, I mean, so one reason why I was hesitant to, you know, invest in this bike and buy it was because I took some spin classes before the pandemic with some friends. And I remember I had this class, it was in sort of like a flywheel or soul cycle, I can't remember which one, where you walk in and it's basically this theater where the instructor is illuminated and, you know, you have your rows of cyclers or spinners. And this instructor in particular would just shout out people from the leaderboard, their usernames, but shout out the ones also who were not doing well and say, come on, like so-and-so username, you can step it up.
Unacceptable.
I just did not like that experience at all. And so for me, being able to work out by myself, but also have the stats so I can privately see whatever metrics of improvement is, like, whatever I create in my own head or want.
Yeah.
That feels so much better. But yeah, that in-person class, I hope that instructor was, you know, the rare type, but I definitely did not want a competitive or experience like that.
Well, one thing about the pandemic is that it's taken it out of that, right? Like some of the older classes, you can see that there are riders in the studio. But for me, any comparison at all to a person that is doing the same thing is just totally toxic.
Yeah, I just give up.
Same. I'm like,
I'm like, done.
It's interesting. One of my takeaways from this is, for me, this entire program is a better tool for me than I thought it might turn out to be. But A, you have to kind of hack it.
That's right.
In a way, and sometimes use it a little differently from the way it's intended, in the sense that you really do have to be willing to do that and not follow the prompts and everything. And I also think that if you are in a position where, you know, your relationship with diet culture is super tense and you feel like you wouldn't have that filter, like if it's going to be really super triggering to sometimes hear those things like about don't make excuses. God, I hate the word excuses in the context of riding a stationary bike.
I know. It's a miracle I woke up today. Come on.
Which Alex always says, you woke up today.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I do think that you have to be super careful about that. I interestingly think you can use a program like this and work around its issues with diet culture, but they are present. And as you say, you just have to know how to check out when they start talking about your little rip shoulder.
Yeah.
It's kind of a little bit like having your office in your home is having your gym in your home, right? Like it is right there staring you in the face. And just as it can be hard to, I'll speak from personal experience, it can be hard to draw the line of saying, all right, work is off because my desk is literally 4 feet from my bed.
Yeah.
Well, it can be hard to say, no, not going to work out today when that bike is right there. And it's like, I don't have an excuse. I mean, look, that voice is in my head, Linda. We all have our demons. That is one for me. And so I do think that that is one kind of odd drawback I hadn't really considered until just now when we were talking. Like, there's the work-life balance, and also, like, if you struggle with exercise-life balance, having this thing, like, living thing that talks to you in your house, I'm sure can be a problem.
We've talked about this in terms of diet culture, but another thing that I do think, you know, and this is something that if you're interested in a deep dive in this, everybody should read Ann Helen Peterson's culture study on Peloton, which is just extraordinarily well done. But a thing that I think is also kind of important to remember is that selling a kind of aspirational living, which is both about optimizing your body, optimizing your life. You know, I know we all saw one of the instructors, Allie Love, got married, and it was like an insanely, it took over every social media feed.
Social media plans for everyone who was attending.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I believe me, if you think I didn't see who didn't go, I was.
Oh, absolutely.
But I will say, like, there is a kind of aspirational living that they are also selling that I find very, very icky because it is affluent. It has zero identity beyond being for everything. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're mm-hmm. never going to sell you any politics. And there's definitely the instructors that will call, that will say, Robin, one of them, you know, kings, queens, non-binary royalty. I appreciate all of that. I also know that there is a, it is also kept deliberately neutral
yes.
in this way that I find a little gross.
Yes.
My so one of my friends, Caitlin Dewey, writes a newsletter, Links I Would G-Chat You If We Were Friends. Mm. And she actually wrote about the politicization of Peloton, where there was an incident with an instructor. The instructor basically said, I can handle coronavirus taking down the White House, but I cannot handle coronavirus taking down the NFL, okay? And the Peloton heads basically had to come out and say, you know, in response to a lot of criticism and vitriol from conservatives, that they were going to make Peloton nonpartisan and essentially encourage the instructors not to, you know, talk about politics. And so I find that, I mean, of course, not surprising. And I mean, granted, it's not like the Peloton demographics are exactly the same as, you know, who I would imagine would watch HGTV all day. but I find the sort of that aspect of it a little, I don't know.
Chilling.
Queasy.
Oh,
you know, I don't follow these instructors on Instagram anymore because I don't need to see Cody Rigsby and his beautiful life. I don't need to see Robin Arzone or Allie Love or Alex, you know, in their wonderful places doing their things with all their beautiful friends. It's just, it's too much.
Penthouses. They all live in a penthouse.
Right. But the thing about politicization of Peloton, it's so interesting and also disconcertingly, yes, vague and beige when they do sort of tiptoe up to the line of politicization, which they do.
Yeah.
Some of the instructors will say that Black Lives Matter. Some will say, you know, non-binary, acknowledge their he, she's, and they's in the world. And doing that in our current American society does have a particular political valence, and it is left-leaning. I think that is pretty fair to say. But I often wonder how meaningful it is. Like, for example, diversity is a great thing, and when they have, like, their Black History Month, Latino History Month.
Asian History Month one, yeah.
Right. As a white person, I feel like I can't weigh in on that, but I will say that one of my most memorable classes was a Women's History Month strength class, and I was like, I wonder how they are going to tie women's history into this. And the instructor, to her credit, knew a wild amount about Alice Paul and suffrage. But on the other hand, she was like, we're going to do 100 push-ups for 100 years of voting. And I was like, wait, why?
100 like, push-ups.
Also, I can't do 100 push-ups. But why? It just felt so silly and arbitrary. And so I feel like some of their attempts to put meaning behind the classes feel very shoehorned in, you know?
I do agree. I did take this Lunar New Year ride. And the class itself was so strange because it was this instructor who is, you know, Asian American. And I was like, this is going to be interesting. What is this instructor even going to say that is inspiring or kind of, you know, helpful for this, you know, very pan-Asian broad demographic experience where Asian American identity is so broad.
Right.
And the instructor ended up talking about the manufacturing for Peloton in Taiwan. Hmm. And of course, there were other things that were said, but I was very much like, Okay, you just shouted out and thanked the workers in Taiwan who made the bike. That is an interesting choice.
Huh. It is an interesting choice.
I don't even know how to feel.
That's the one thing, because there are lots of times where people say, like, remember when Cody was just like, you got to vote, you got to vote, you got to vote, which, like, I too believe we should all vote. But there's something about using it in the service of this giant multinational media company, which is the thing that, like, it gives me the same feeling that I always felt, you know, when, like, NBC did that, the more you know thing, like, okay.
Yeah.
You care so much, then XYZ. So I think it's just using it in the service of this, like, entirely politically neutral thing. Like, it's hard to shout out the workers in Taiwan without taking a position politically on other things as well, and telling your people not to.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that they donated, you know, X amount of money to specific Asian American organizations when there was that rise in hate crimes. But, you know, it's hard to feel when you're taking these classes what the meaning is.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot to talk about with Peloton. And honestly, like, you know, we'll probably sign off and then, you know, we'll talk for another hour and a half about which instructor is best.
And which instructor is going to star in a holiday movie one day.
Cody.
That's my prediction.
Absolutely true. I agree. I could not agree more. And we want to know what you think about Peloton and, of course, other bikes, other fitness. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to all of you riders for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And we will see you all tomorrow. All right. Are we ready, Peloton?
Woo!